Hello friends, today is July 11th, 2013, and I'm working now with the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 114A. We're on page 415 of the book. There are about 695 pages in this book, so we've accomplished approximately two-thirds, a little less, of the book so far. Then we could start at the beginning, couldn't we, and work again. We've been talking about the structure of a triangle. There is always a dominating line of force and two lines which, during a particular cycle, are conditioned by that dominating line. And then DK gave us to help us figure this out, the triangle of electric fire, solar fire, and fire by friction, which we realize demonstrates with different dominating forces over time. At first and for far the longest period of time, it is the fire by friction which dominates, and that for millions of years, really. The domination of solar fire will occur in a number of thousands of years, and then by electric fire, will continue on beyond the human stage and last again for the greater proportion of time. But in the human phase, strictly human phase, it lasts for a very small amount of time until one transcends being human, and then electric fire is the dominant force all the way on to the cardinal cross. Initiatory fire, qualificatory fire, and purificatory fire. Will, love, wisdom, and activity, the monad, soul, and personality. These triplicities are all quite clear, and we realize that this is a foundational thought when analyzing various triangles. Maybe not all of them will come out quite so neatly over time. Some of the triangles, perhaps, will never work exactly in this way, but this is a fundamental principle. So what I've said here is that the emergent forces are within a triangle are time conditioned at different times. One or other of the three aspects will rule. And our challenge sometime is to discover whether there actually are three aspects in a particular triangle. When, for instance, we blend three signs of the zodiac or three planets, is it necessarily so that each one of them must take up a different function, one of the aspectual functions, either the first, second, or third? When we're dealing with the triangle of the synthesizing planets, that's pretty easy. Uranus takes up the first, Saturn the third, and Neptune the second aspect. And, of course, in different solar systems, let's say in the previous solar system, which was probably synthesized at some point, Saturn was probably the synthesizer. In our present solar system, it may well be Neptune with its second ray monad that is the synthesizer, and in the future solar system, the dominating force will probably be Uranus with its first ray monad, as that will be a solar system with a first ray personality, I suspect, even though our solar logos has a second ray soul. So some of the triangles, I think, are easier to work out in terms of their first, second, and third aspects. We're told that the three super principles at the present time are expressed through Saturn, Jupiter, and Venus. Again, with a slight a rearrangement of perspective, we can find Saturn as the exponent of the first aspect, Jupiter of the second, and Venus representing the monastic permanent atom as the exponent of the third aspect. But let's say that when you have three first-ray planets in a triangle, let's, for instance, Mars, Vulcan, and Pluto, how shall we arrange these? How should we arrange those? Well, we'll defer our answer to that question. There are, you know, many ways in which Vulcan represents the heart of the sun, that Mars may have a kind of a fifth-ray, first-ray monad, and that Pluto may represent a strong interior intelligence, despite its outwardly lethal expression. We have to know a lot about the planets to really arrange them properly in terms of the first, second, and third aspect. And then, of course, there may be rotations or revolutions, triangles and revolution. And at different times, different ones may be dominant, even while preserving their main aspect or their main ray. Then going on here, we are in Esoteric Astrology, Adventure 114, page 415, and he says, I point out this triplicity of the three fire signs, or the three aspects of fire, as it is one which is familiar to you and at the same time constitutes a good illustration of a basic law. There are others, I suppose, which are more subtle and more difficult, in which it is more difficult to see the principle at work. Now we have a new subject, triangles of energy. Energy is generally superior to force and is less contained within a particular form. Generally, force is energy within form or energy applied to form. Energy per se may be relatively independent of form. Sometimes DK uses these terms, energy and force, in a very specific way, and other times it seems that the distinction between them is not so clear, at least not so clear to us. Lying behind all the many interlocking triangles of our solar system and conditioning them to a very large extent, though today more potentially than expressively, as our solar system has far to go, are three energies coming from three major constellations. So we have often a three hovering above a seven. If you look at one of the important charts here, you will see how the three on our cosmic physical plane hover above the seven. The three persons of the Trinity, the three expressions, main expressions of our solar logos, hover above the seven sacred planets. So configurations where three and seven are found are somewhat Kabbalistic and relate to the number 10 and carry much of the first and seventh, first and third rays rather than the second so much. All right. So there are three energies coming from three major constellations. They are the emanations from the Great Bear, certainly a constellation, from the Pleiades, certainly a major constellation, and probably the major constellation in our local cosmos system, and from Sirius, and this may be a blind. I have sometimes felt that Sirius is a blind for the blind for Ursa Minor, little bear. Whoop, lunar body. Nope, little bear, which seems to have some of the same qualities that it has, but is, after all, a constellation. Sirius has an A and B associated with it, and even a C star, which is darkened, and perhaps other vestigial remains of that particular Sirian solar logos. Sometimes the Tibetan calls it a constellation, and other times it seems that it's definitely a solar logos rather than a constellation. It is certainly intimately related to our solar system and far more advanced than our solar system. Sirius is a solar logos which I believe has a cosmic mental polarization, whereas our solar logos does not yet have that, and so Sirius is to our solar logos as a kind of initiator. But of course, in terms of magnitude, it would seem that the entire constellation of the Great Bear, which Little Bear, which includes Polaris and other important stars, would be more important than Sirius in a larger and cosmic sense. though perhaps Sirius is the most important in terms of relating to our solar system and to us. And DK does talk about, once, the great importance of the triangle, Great Bear, Pleiades, and Little Bear, with the Little Bear having a 7 which reflects the Great Bear's 7, and the total is 14. As I said, a very important number in occultism, and I think especially in Egyptian occultism. So much depends on what you do with the, how you arrive at the 14. Let's just put it like that. If you, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, if we have 4 triplicities and a point, in other words, from the number 12, we can arrive at the 14 by through the power of a triplicity. From the number 10, we can arrive at the number 12. I'll go over that at some point. It might be pointed out that, okay, the energies coming from the Great Bear are related to the will or purpose of the solar logos and are to this great being what the monad is to man. I think what he means there is that the energies of the entire Great Bear, the energies of the entire Great Bear are related to our solar logos as the monad is to man. That's quite a distance. If by man he means the entire human being, with the monad being the highest aspect of that human being, we can understand what he's talking about. Does he mean man as a personality or the entirety of man? The Great Bear has been called by Stephen Pugh the Cosmic Manu, and I think there's good reason for that. The Great Bear has the 7 rays contained within its 7 major stars, but they reach our solar system as the will aspect particularly of those 7 rays. The 7 rays are also present in the Pleiades and probably the Little Bear as well, and perhaps to a certain extent in Sirius, but they are reaching our solar system in different aspects. For instance, the intelligence aspect of the rays would come via the Pleiades, and the love aspect, or the wisdom aspect, via the Little Bear, or via Sirius. So anyway, repeating, the energies coming from the Great Bear are related to the will or purpose of the solar logos, and are to this great being what the monad is to man. So apparently, the Great Bear feeds the will aspect of the solar logos. We can consider it that way. Feeds or stimulates. The Great Bear feeds or stimulates the will aspect of the solar logos. This is a deep mystery and one which even the highest initiate cannot yet grasp. Well, DK gives it to us for us to perhaps become enter a state of wonder at this relationship, but it is not apparently intellectually grasped by even those far greater than ourselves. Or it is not realized, the full import of it is not realized by even those far greater than ourselves. Its sevenfold unified energies pass through Shambhala. So that's a very important connection. A Great Bear Shambhala connection. There's also a Great Bear Vulcan connection in a strange sort of way, and Vulcan is connected with Shambhala as well. Sometimes I think about the University of the 7 Rays and how we conceived it in the earlier days, and there does seem to be, of course, a Great Bear connection. And occasionally when I look at my own chart and I try to fathom the decanate rulerships, what I see is that the rising sign is Cancer, and in the last decanate, which is ruled by the Great Bear, and it is also, in a sense, ruled by the Moon, which is a veil for Vulcan, which is again associated with the seven head centers in the human being, whereas the Great Bear, on a much higher level, is associated with the seven head centers of the one about whom naught may be said. So there is a connection. There is a connection there. And I suppose the main point is to turn these connections into really practical expressions on behalf of humanity. Okay, I'm going to have to... I have two computers going at the same time. Sorry to disappear. Just in case something happens to this version, so as not to lose time. And sometimes they want to shut your computer off, you know. And if you don't catch it, you're going to find that you're no longer recording on another computer. Anyway, back to the subject. These energies pour through Shambhala particularly. And now we come to the energies coming from Sirius, from the sun, Sirius. Now note that he did not, capital He, did not call Sirius, or did not refer to Sirius as a constellation here. So DK goes back and forth. Sometimes Sirius is considered a constellation, and sometimes it is considered a sun. The energies we're talking about, well, you know, the path of studying the seven rays is particularly a second ray path. The seven streams of energy must wean away the attention of the scholar from all that has been found and stored and used. This is the law of repulse for the second ray, and I will refer to that from all that has been found, stored. Yeah, there it is. All right, so the seven ways of light, not streams but ways, must wean away the attention of the scholar from all that has been found, stored, and used. This he repulses and finds his way into that hall of wisdom, which has been built upon a hill and not deep underground. Only the opened eye can find this way. So whereas astrology is particularly a third ray type of discipline, the study of the seven rays, while not excluded from those who follow the third ray, is a second ray mode of discipline. And so we think about Sirius itself, sponsoring the lodge on our earth, the Great White Lodge, and its seven ashrams guided by the seven rays, Sirius being essentially, I think, a second ray monad, though a sixth ray monad before that, I suspect. We find Sirius perhaps as a local source of the seven rays from their love aspect. That is my understanding. It's not just the Great Bear that is the source of the seven rays. The Pleiades also should be included. Then we'll have 21 energies, which combined together will give us the 22, which particularly relate to our solar system, whose number at the moment should be 22, a second-ray personality and a second-ray soul. With the monad, well, monad may be occultly non-effective, as our solar logos is not yet a sacred solar logos, and by analogy, non-sacred planets also have the monadic ray occultly non-effective. So the energies coming from the sun, Sirius, are related to the love wisdom aspect or to the attractive power of our solar logos. DK talks about this power of attraction. He says it's sometimes named love, but love is a much misunderstood word. So probably to the law of attraction and the attractive power of our solar logos and to the soul of that great being, which, let us remind ourselves, this soul is upon the second ray. So the purportedly fifth ray soul of the logos of Sirius, a great luminosity, is related to the second ray soul of our solar logos. And of course, Sirius has a profound second ray, which makes that resonance proper and predictable. The cosmic soul energy, This cosmic soul energy is related to the hierarchy, which in a sense expresses the heart of the sun, and the heart of the sun is, in a sense, the soul of our solar logos. You've been told that the Great White Lodge on Sirius finds its reflection and a mode of spiritual service and outlet in the Great White Lodge of our planet, the hierarchy. That is the connection. The three orders of lives on Sirius represent a kind of blue lodge, which has also been called a Great White Lodge, and we have our own Great White Lodge here, which is learning from the solar our solar logos, which is learning from Sirius. And Sirius is that great being which is the inspiration of our Great White Lodge on this particular planet. And I suppose there are other lodges on other planets which reflect the Sirian energy, but we have a particular connection with Sirius, DK tells us, and also the second race soul of our planetary logos should be resonant with the great second ray coming forth from Sirius. There's so much illumination that comes from Sirius. I'm thinking about the period of development which follows the temptations in the desert between the second and third initiation, and how the man moves towards true illumination and in a sense can no longer choose the left-hand path and is committed to a Sirian line of development. And this illumination must also come, Sirius must play its role in this, because it's so potent fifth ray and its second ray expression. We're told that the fifth ray is the most luminous of all the ray lords, and that the second ray souls are the most luminous at this time. Anyway, so Sirius, our hierarchy, their Great White Lodge, our Great White Lodge, a mode of service for them. And, you know, from another perspective, I would expect that Sirius would be related to the Little Bear, Ursa Minor, which carries with it a second ray expression, playing the role of second ray to the first ray of the Father aspect through the Great Bear. The energy is coming from the Pleiades, and I would say some of them, because he does expand this further in other places, are an aggregation of seven energies. Seven major energies for the seven major stars, though the two parents, Atlas and Pleione, as a nine, should be also considered, I think. Indeed, there are nine paths. And I do wonder, you know, at first there are seven paths upon the way of higher evolution, but eventually, well, even now, there are nine paths, and I wonder if somehow it doesn't all end within the Pleiades, and within those nine, somehow, finally, major stars within the Pleiades, at least major from our perspective. So the energies coming from the Pleiades, an aggregation of seven energies, are connected with the active intelligent aspect of the logoic expression, and are and influence the form side of all manifestation. They focus primarily through humanity, and they are associated, these Pleiadian, Pleiadian energies are associated with the mother aspect. Okay. Pleiadian. Oh, one could just spell, huh? Pleading, Pleiadian, Pleiades. I always get those mixed up. Pleiadian, Pleiades. Pleiadian energies. Let's make that kind of a, add that one to the dictionary. Pleiadian. All right. So we have the three aspects of divinity involved in this super triangle that influence all of our systemic energies. The systemic energies are largely solar and are the result of our solar logos. And if they involve the planets, they involve the planets as an aspect of our solar logos. So lying behind all the many interlocking triangles of our solar system, and in a sense, I suppose, stimulating them all, and conditioning them to a very large extent, though this will emerge more with the development of our solar logos, because they're more potential now than actually expressive, are the three energies coming from three major constellations, the Great Bear, the Pleiades, and Sirius. Interesting that particular order, because in a very profound sense, the Pleiades do give us the energy of cosmic booty, and Sirius gives us the energy of Manus. So we oftentimes think of Sirius as the cosmic Christ and the dispenser of secondary energy, and the Pleiades as the dispensers of the energy of intelligence. But there is the purportedly fifth-ray soul of Sirius, and the perhaps second-ray soul of the Pleiadian entity. Certainly the rays 3 and 2 are strongly involved in the Pleiades, and it is the hub of our local cosmic wheel. So, Great Bear, the Sun Sirius, and the Pleiades. Connected with this major triangle and affecting powerfully our entire solar system is a triple interrelation of great interest, which has a special and peculiar relation to humanity. This triangle of forces relates one of these major constellations, one of the zodiacal signs, and one of the sacred planets within our solar system. And I think we can pretty well imagine what this is going to be. So this is the major triangle, all of the constellations being more or less on the same level, but now we have a type of triangle consisting of different levels of entity. We have a major constellation, we have a zodiacal constellation, which is not considered to be major, and then we have a planet. But you kind of wonder if the constellations of the zodiac are the heart in the head center, the one about whom naught may be said, and some of the triple constellations, the three great constellations, are actually chakras within the one about whom naught may be said, such as, let us say, the Sirian system, which can relate, let us say, to the solar plexus of the one about whom naught may be said, would include our sun. I'm beginning to see a very strong hint how the constellations in the heart and the head center, two of them, are related to each one of these chakric areas. The seven solar systems, of which ours is one, may well include Sirius and be called a Sirian system. Now, some theorists have felt that Sirius per se, and perhaps Sirius B with Sirius A, represents the Ajna center in the one about whom naught may be said. But I think a good candidate for that Ajna center is the entire constellation of the Little Bear, with its directive influence. Sirius and the Little Bear, I think, are respectively the lower and higher correspondences to each other. So, we have here, we're now going to look at dividing the triangles in such a way that a triangle includes one of the great super constellations, one of the signs of the zodiac or constellations of the zodiac, and one of the planets. I still, you know, have my question about whether our seven solar systems, let's say, which may well include Sirius, should be considered superior to or inferior to one of the major petals in the heart of the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, namely a zodiacal constellation. This seems to place the zodiacal constellations in a very high position. We have seven head centers within the human being. Are they specifically within the head or etherically, or are they above the head? And we can question whether these seven head centers are related to the 12 petals of our heart in the head center in such a way that they are inferior or superior to the petals of our heart in the head center. From one perspective, the seven head centers are found within the head. Then there are also some diagrams which suggest one can look for centers in an ajna group somewhat above the head, like the Tibetans' feathered hats, which seem to go in a line above the head. But the question of superiority or inferiority is a hierarchical question, and we want to know which is more dominant. The Great Bear represents the seven head centers of the one about whom naught may be said. It seems that the 12 constellations of the zodiac as a whole are in a superior position, if we use the analogy from man. At least in man, they are placed, by one reckoning, in a superior position. So the question is the entire circle of the zodiac superior to the seven major stars of the Great Bear? Is any one of the petals in the heart and the head center, meaning any one constellation of the zodiac, superior to a star in the Great Bear, which represents a head center in the one about whom naught may be said? I would think so. Constellations, I think, are of a higher order of magnitude than stars. So there would be a kind of superiority of each petal in the heart and head center of the one about whom naught may be said to each star in the Great Bear. And it looks as if the entire zodiacal circle is superior to the constellation of the Great Bear, per se. Now, yes, that's right, that's right. Now, the question is any particular petal in the one about whom naught may be said, in the heart and the head center there, superior to the entirety of the Great Bear? And that is another question altogether. And yet, the way these constellations are arranged, usually the Great Bear is considered one of the super constellations, and the constellations of the zodiac are considered to be relatively inferior. So we do have some questions there about magnitude. And sometimes questions about power and magnitude can be solved relatively by considering which of two sources has the greater effect upon us at this time. Now, Sirius has a tremendous effect upon us at this time, but cosmically, its magnitude or its power may be less than certain more distant constellations, which do not have as great an effect upon us as Sirius has, because they cannot reach us or we cannot absorb their energies at this time. Yet, from the cosmic point of view, they are greater than Sirius. Sirius simply is greater to us because it is closer and more effective. Okay, a little digression there, perhaps. But I'm always fascinated by this question of hierarchality, or hierarchy, just maybe hierarchy. It's a question of what is greater and what is lesser. And there are many relativities. And it is somewhat dramatized for us in the naming or the assignment of relative magnitude of stars and absolute magnitude. Of course, they are measured in such a way that the negative numbers are higher. But let's just say that Sirius has a relative magnitude, which is very high. It's a first magnitude star. It's very bright for our solar system. And some other stars, far more distant, have a lesser relative magnitude than Sirius has. And yet in themselves, they are far greater sources. It's just they are so distant they don't have the effect upon us that a lesser star, Sirius, has because it's closer. Now you think, you know, here's a child, and the child has two parents. They are of relative magnitude, very great for the child. They are the great luminaries in the child's sky. But what are these parents? They may be very ordinary people. What are they in society? They fade immediately in terms of absolute magnitude, whereas some great person may have no influence whatsoever upon the child, yet in an absolute sense have a much greater magnitude. It's an analogy. I think you see what I mean. So we cannot tell simply because of relative magnitude or relative power what may be the absolute magnitude of a particular source unless we measure it in a much larger context. I'm trying to think, you know, in Orion, we have some tremendously powerful stars that are just, by some measures, hundreds of thousands times greater in their luminosity than our sun. Just imagine that. And yet Sirius, which is some 33 perhaps times greater than our sun, has a much greater effect upon us than some of these stars which have luminosities, according to Wikipedia anyway, more recent measurements, which are over 100 or 200 or 300,000 times brighter than our sun. Well, anyway, it puts the question of magnitude right in front of our consciousness, and it tells us that all is not as it seems to be. And what is tremendously bright and influential in a relative sense, and in terms of our own lives, may be only middling or small or even relatively insignificant in terms of the larger picture. So we have to adjust the relativity of our thinking, seeing things in the smaller context, yes, but also to gain a greater understanding of true proportion, attempting to see things in the larger context. Now think of it, you know, here's Andromeda, a galaxy with, I don't know, what's the latest count? Does it have 250 billion stars, or does it have more solar logo? So solar logo, 250 billion solar logo and stars. It's very faint. Very faint when viewed from our solar system, and I suppose from our galaxy, because it's so far away. Its absolute magnitude is tremendous. It's if we were to really measure it in term and compare all the local stars, it's galactic in proportion, far greater than any single solar logos, because it contains billions of them. But what is its effect upon us? Probably at this time, very little upon the individual or upon the upon humanity or upon our planet, very, very little. Of course, it would have a foundational effect. It's so far away, but it's a tremendous, tremendous source. I don't want to beat a dead horse here too much. You do see the point, I'm sure. Sometimes I tend to, you know, I don't know if it's a secondary thing, but I circle broodingly around a subject till I extract all the juice from it. And it can become tedious, I do realize. I realize that I did that a little bit with the cycles of 250,000, 25,000, and 2,500 years, monadic soul and personality cycles, trying to extract their meaning and their zodiacal relations. It's a brooding type of thought in which the hope is that something intuitive emerges from the constant brooding. But, you know, I realize if you want to follow me in this, it's great. And if not, it can seem tedious. All right, on to the subject. The first triangle is the Pleiades, Cancer, and Venus. Obviously connecting Venus, interestingly, with the active intelligence aspect, which it should be, with the active intelligence aspect. even though usually it has a very second aspect, meaning it does have a powerful fifth ray, and probably a fifth ray soul is my present estimation. Cancer carries the third and seventh ray. It's connected with active intelligence. The Pleiades are basically demonstrations of the third ray, though a powerful second ray lies behind it, and the connection with cosmic booty, probably on a higher turn of the spiral. Mothers are not attentive only to the form of their progeny, but to the psyche as well. And the second aspect is the great psychic. He says second ray produces the great psychic and deals with psyche or with soul. So interesting then to see Venus connected with active intelligence. Now, we did, in one of the discussions, we looked at Venus and the moon in relation to Taurus. And we saw that Venus could be considered as ruling the third decanate from a certain perspective, if we consider Saturn ruling the first. And some of what DK has said inclines one to think, yes, that Saturn may rule the first decanate, though it has Venus and the moon are often interchangeable and could be associated with the first decanate. First decanate from a certain point is Taurus sub Taurus, and Taurus is has an exalted moon and a rulership of Venus. So Venus and the moon are often connected with each other, but the moon is representing the lower aspect of active intelligence and Venus the higher. So the moon, to a certain extent, represents the, we could say, the mental unit. And really Venus is part of the Earth, so it's the Earth with its symbol that represents the mental unit. And the symbol of the mental unit and Earth and even the base of the spine are all the same. They're the cross with the circle around it. And then Venus would represent the monastic permanent atom, just as it does with the three super principles in our solar system, Jupiter, Saturn, Jupiter, and Venus. So maybe it's not surprising entirely to see Venus as part of this active intelligence setup. Though essentially, you know, how Venus operates in normal astrology is as the great attractive force. What DK is trying to tell us about Venus, it is the intellect and a great illuminator, and it is the light of love, we might say. The love part of it comes from its, finally, second ray monad, six is in there as well, and that's the love part, and the light is the servant of that love. All right, the second triangle, the Great Bear, Aries, Pluto, wow. Well, no question, the Great Bear, as the cosmic Manu, as Stephen says, gives us the first ray. And it represents the will aspect of the expression of the seven rays. And Aries is, at least in this world period, a primary first ray sign with the reflection of the seventh ray being the concrete aspect of the first. And Pluto, at this time, a non-sacred planet, which expresses primarily, as far as we're concerned, the first ray. Though it also has these deep intellect factors connected with it, you know, involved in research and mentality and some third and fifth ray factors in there somewhere. And Shambhala is involved here, the Great Bear, Aries, Pluto. From another point of view, we can have the Great Bear, Aries, and the Sun veiling Vulcan. But that's a different triangle altogether. This would be a pretty potentially destructive triangle. Pluto is, after all, the destroyer, whereas Vulcan has the building aspect connected to it and is finally connected with the heart of the sun and has a strong inner fourth ray and probably second ray. Pluto doesn't. Pluto is more along the intellectual line, including the power of the destroyer on the outer level. Probably with the sacred planets, we're being given the personality ray of these planets. Then another. So far we do see that Cancer is a third aspect constellation and is connected with that great super constellation, the Pleiades, which conveys the third aspect. Great Bear is a great first ray source and is connected with a zodiacal constellation conveying at this time primarily the first aspect. Cancer conveys the third aspect primarily to the average man, whereas Capricorn conveys the third ray, or third aspect, to the disciple. Now, what's the next one? Sirius, Leo, Jupiter. Well, okay, Sirius as the conveyor of love and wisdom, as our local cosmic Christ, reflecting perhaps the sun aspect, S-O-N, of the little bear. Leo, being of the three fire signs, the one that most represents consciousness, with Aries as the father and Sagittarius, or Aries as the monad and Sagittarius as the personality body. So Leo is consciousness on the second aspect, and Jupiter, a great second ray source, probably its soul ray. Sirius, Leo, Jupiter, representing the spiritual hierarchy. So what did it say of these three triangles? It says that connected with the major triangle, we can imagine these lesser triangles as if suspended from the major triangle of Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades, is a triple interrelation of great interest, which has special and peculiar relation to humanity. I guess that's the point. Because if we're going to cultivate in humanity the power of active intelligence, the Cancer-Venus connection is very important. As humanity cultivates the power of the destroyer, it's Aries-Pluto that are very important. And cultivating the hierarchical love, wisdom, consciousness is Leo and Jupiter, which are of great importance. Isn't it interesting when contrasting Jupiter and Venus to see that it is Jupiter that is connected with the second aspect, and Venus, for all of its second aspect, connected with the third. So the Jupiter doesn't seem to have that monastic quality that Venus does have. Okay. Right. I wonder if you can grasp, at least partially and symbolically, the fact that these triangles must not be thought of as placed, static, and eternally the same, or even as three-dimensional. He's trying to disabuse our minds of certain natural inclinations towards illusion as we consider the triangles. After all, I mean, we can locate these triangles in space, you know. We can have the Great Bear and the constellation Aries and the planet Pluto. We can think of them spatially, and all of these for that matter. We can think of them spatially. But he's telling us there's something more to it. They must be regarded as in rapid movement, revolving eternally in space, and ceaselessly moving onward, and as a fourth and fifth dimensional extension. Well, that's a sentence for initiates, isn't it? I guess when I think of the fourth and fifth dimension, I don't think of geometrical dimensions so much. I think of Bodhi as fourth dimensional and Atmic as fifth dimensional. I consider every plane, or since a plane is a state of consciousness, every plane as an added dimension. And so I consider our cosmic physical plane as having seven main dimensions and 49 subsidiary dimensions and 343 minute dimensions, as every one of our sub-systemic subplanes is further subdivided, we've been told. 343, did I say that? 343 is the number. All right, so this is something for us to visualize, a rapid movement, revolving eternally in space, ceaselessly moving onward. I guess what is suggested here is the relationship promotes the evolution of each of its members, and thus it would move onward towards each member would move onward towards its own fourth and fifth dimensional extension, which would be different for each. The goals of the lords of the three great constellations, the zodiacal lords and the planetary lords, have to be different, and their systems of cosmic initiation have to be different. Our solar logos, from that perspective, going on the solar line of evolution, is seeking a sort of a third dimensional polarization in the cosmic mind, and has not yet achieved that. We have our own lesser system of initiation in human beings, and we seek our own higher dimensions in terms of the subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. But for these great lords, they are not looking for initiatory advancement on the cosmic physical plane, not at all. They would be looking towards the cosmic mental, cosmic buddhic, and cosmic atmic extensions. Anyway, that is speculation. And he's told us that we must consider rotation and probably a constant flow of circulating energy between these members of these triangles. And I think, you know, we know enough about the power of each one of the members of these triangles to get a sense of how they might work together. You know, let us just say that when Jupiter is coming up to the presence in Leo, pretty soon it's in Cancer now, another year or so, when it goes into the sign Leo, it will be related to the constellation Leo, which is related to the constellation Sirius, and we can imagine that at the time of the Sirius festival, when Jupiter is in Leo, there's going to be a very great opportunity to receive the energies which result from the presence and dynamics of this triangle. Well, you know, the greater astrologers of the hierarchy, and I suppose among the planetary logoi, there are those who have that kind of cosmic perception which makes of them planetary astrologers, and on, they would be thinking in these terms. For us, we think in terms of these triangles as the possibility of receiving some small influence from them, for humanity as a whole, probably not so much for the individual. There is no way of depicting them, these triangles, or bringing them visually to your attention, for only the inner eye of vision can imagine their progression, position, or appearance. So a whole different type of perception is needed, and the, the solar, first solar initiation is required, because only then can the unifying inner eye present its perceptions. So one has to be an initiate of the third degree in order to enter this stellar realm of perception, or this realm of stellar perception. There is no way of depicting them or of bringing them visually to your attention. He's given a hint, though. For only the inner eye of vision, the eye of Shiva, the blue eye, can imagine their progression, how they move onward, elevating each member. Their position, well, we can somewhat imagine their position in the celestial sphere, but perhaps their position in the evolution of all members of the celestial sphere, or the appearance of these triangles. And I suppose when we talk about position, we're talking about the position of such a triangle in relation to other triangles. It must be a fantastic revelation of divine geometry on the planetary, solar, and constellational level. We are, in fact, microscopic man. We are tiny little bugs. We are little, I wonder if we're bacteria. Or viruses. I wonder in proportion just what we are. To some greater beings, we must seem as the veriest atoms or atomic particles. it does give you some sense of the vastness into which we are heading, participatorily and perceptually, and gives hope and confidence and faith and wonder and the realization of the grandeur of cosmos, of which we are a part and which, in another sense, as the one being we sponsor. These three major triangles are only partially as yet in expression as far as our solar system is concerned, and only one point of the Great Triangle is, for instance, one point of the Great Bear constitutes with Aries a related line of force. Okay, so we do not have the full expression of the triangle, not yet, not the full expression. So now he is talking about these three leveled triangles. These three major triangles are only partially as yet an expression as far as our solar system is concerned. Maybe other solar systems have a greater expression. And only one point of the Great Triangle, as for instance one point of the Great Bear, constitutes with Aries a related line of force. Not all points in the Great Bear, not all stars perhaps, constitute with Aries a related line of force. Only one point of Aries within itself, or within its own range of interplay, with Leo and Capricorn, is related to Pluto. Aha, he's getting quite intricate here. We know that Aries, Leo, and Capricorn constitute the zodiacal triangle through which the first ray is transmitted. Therefore, yes, indeed, he's saying it, the entire cosmic web and solar system is an intricate, constantly moving, interwoven series of triangles, wherein each point of a triangle emanates three lines or streams of energy, nine in all. And we have been discussing the idea that every triplicity is really a ninefold demonstration. This has been evident in some of the examples we have used before. It's even evident in the numerology of the third ray. The number representing the third ray is nine. The three and the nine are intimately connected in that respect. So he's trying to give us a grasp of this cosmic web, some slight visualization of it, and some sense of how there is not an entirety of activation operative yet, but only certain points within any source connect with other points. So perhaps the word points does not mean stars. One point of the Great Bear constitutes the area, a related line of force. Yes, this is something to think about. Perhaps the word point in this context does not mean star. It's as if in these triangles, yeah, every one of them has three points, but there are more stars involved. And even for the ones that have fewer than three stars, three active stars, let us consider Sirius, there are nevertheless three points. So a point of a participant in a triangle may not be a star. And after all, there are no stars in planets, are there? But every planet would have, from this description, three points as well. Okay, only one point of Aries within itself, or within its range of interplay, with Leo and Capricorn, is related to Pluto. You begin to wonder that. Would another point be related to Vulcan, and another point be related to Uranus, possibly? Other first-ray distributors? Certainly Vulcan is, and Uranus is monadically. Therefore, the entire cosmic web of the solar system is an intricate, constantly moving, interwoven series of triangles, wherein each point of a triangle emanates three lines or streams, nine in all. So a triangle is ninefold in a way due to the three lines or streams which come from every point. And from a certain perspective, only one point of Aries, how many points does Aries or any member of a triangle have? They do have three lines. Does each line emanate from a point? That may be the case. Therefore, the entire cosmic web and solar system is an intricate, and you know, who appreciates that intricacy more than the combination of the second and third ray, constantly moving, fifth ray too, interwoven series of triangles wherein each point of a triangle emanates, now this time the point means vertex, I think, vertex. And a vertex is the point of a triangle. Of a triangle emanates three lines or streams of energy, nine in all. It is likewise responsive to and receptive of the energies, likewise triple in nature, which lie within its periphery or sphere of influence and vibratory activity. So we're talking about the emanatory power and receptivity of the points within a triangle. It is getting intricate, isn't it? It's getting quite cosmic, isn't it? So maybe it's time to end this section. And Esoteric Astrology Adventure 114A, page 417. In a minute, DK is going to tell us how useless it is for us to try to unravel all this. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 114B, page 417. Well, we have to deal with subjects which lie beyond our ken, because when we reach towards them and we fall back failing, realizing that the apprehensive grasp of our mind is insufficient, we somehow at the same time are increasing our power of grasp, our power of apprehension. He says, you know, try to work with the abstract mind even though you can't, because it will increase the power of the abstract mind. So we realize it's not only for information that we are studying esoteric astrology, a great abstract subject, but we are studying it also because it builds up our ability to apprehend subtle things. We are exercising faculties which are not yet working fully or even properly within our nature, but we are exercising them and they are growing. So this is a growthful study, as well as a study that gives us items of information. Okay, friends, we'll call it on this, and we'll go on to Esoteric Astrology 114B as the next effort, unless for some reason I have to change it to 115 because I haven't been able to go on. We'll just try to visualize that. You know, here's a there's something on the cardinal cross, the symbol of the cardinal cross. I'd better include that next time. Cardinal cross seems to have from every triangle three streams of energy going forth, and all of these beings are on the cardinal cross. So every three is becoming a nine, and if we study the symbol of the cardinal cross, we may learn more about this science of triangles. Okay, then. We'll see you before long.